Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Racer's Mindset. I am your host, Brad Gabbart. With me on the line, my co-host, Andrew Hobson. Andrew, how's it going?
Brad, how are you? You were away for a week or so. You went to Loretta's. In that time, I did Tour de Big Bear bicycle race at altitude, which was awesome. It's always a great event. So we haven't done a podcast for a few weeks now. We're probably a little rusty. But I think this one will probably bring us back up to speed pretty quick.
Yeah, I did a little bit of light calisthenics to get myself ready for this. It's been a while since we knocked the rust off here on the podcast, but we've got a great one in store. Charles Dow of Icon Fit is joining us. He himself is an icon in motocross fitness and has some amazing athletes that he's worked with. I'm done sweating in the Tennessee heat. You've been sweating a lot doing all of your active lifestyle. And I'd imagine that, Charles, you're sweating just being grilled by myself and Hoppo because we're here to absolutely just put the tools to you.
I am in the hot seat, but I welcome it. I welcome it.
Awesome. So, we welcome you on the show. Thanks so much.
No, absolutely. Thanks again for having me, guys. We're looking forward to it.
Excellent. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of your well of knowledge, which is quite deep, let's start with the foundation. That's where all good houses are built. Where does the crossroads start with you diving into the world of fitness, like acknowledging that you had a well of knowledge that you wanted to then further develop so that you could help others really achieve greatness? You've worked with some athletes that they've achieved their peak under you. And then in the case of a guy like Jeremy Twitch Stenberg, a guy who's had an extended career, I talked to him at Loretta Lynn's. It's actually quite ridiculous that, a young man who was shaking his head on the line at, X Games 1 or 2, is still going upside down on a dirt bike and he's flexible and capable because of people like you.
Yeah, no, it's been an honor. So working with Jeremy over the years, you know, he's been become one of my closest friends, right? So
nice.
To be able to see the extension of his career because of his dedication to health and fitness and being mindful of having a balanced lifestyle, it's just been key. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. I mean, Matto just turned 43 like 2 weeks ago. Stenberg is turning 43 at the end of this month. And in a couple weeks right behind him is my birthday. So we always kind of chat about that. It's like, hey, man, we still feel young, you know, we're
yeah.
In our 50s, but hey, you know, there's nothing really holding us back except for our family obligations and whatnot, career obligations. But those are all great things as well. But
so where does this all start? Like where did you I assume you started as a trainer before you started your own gym because anyone who sort of like branches out on their own, they usually work somewhere and say, hey, I might be able to do this myself, and I might be able to do it better.
Yeah, so I actually got my first personal certification, personal training certification, when I was 18. So wow. I just graduated high school, and I knew I wanted to go into the fitness, health, you know, realm. Wasn't sure exactly what details I was going to go ahead and focus on and specialize in.
Okay.
End up going to college, Cal State Fullerton. And my sister, what our original plan was, she's only 4 years younger than I am, but she was en route to become a professional tennis player. So if you kind of look back at Michael Chang, one of the youngest tennis players ever to win the French Open.
For sure, yeah.
So his coach was his older brother, Carl. So they were from Placentia. We're from Yorba Linda. So it was the kind of the same city, neighboring city. And just so happens that Michael Chang's high school coach was my coach. And so he kind of gave us the ideas, hey, your little sister's got mad talent, you know? And I was like, hey, you know what? She's got a lot brighter future in the sport of tennis than I do, even though, you know, I played nationally and was nationally ranked, all that good stuff. But we were like, you know what? Maybe we're going to make something happen out of it. So I put everything into my sister, my whole family. We were getting ready to build a tennis court on the side of the house, just go all in. Long story short, she ended up getting hit by a drunk driver. One day on Father's Day,
right.
Kind of a
series of very unfortunate events. Walking with hand in hand with my mom, a drunk driver came out from opposite side of the road and hit her from behind and took her out and ended her tennis career. Fortunately, she's healthy, she's strong, doing very well. So, you know, that's we'll we'll look at the bright side of things in that regards. So that kind of kicked off the whole, you know what, I'm going to help rebuild my sister. I'm going to build her back into the athlete. So that way she can pursue her dream. Fortunately, we got her body back, but unfortunately, the time went by and too many years went by and it just took a lot longer for her to get back on her feet and trying to compete again. By that time, the window of opportunities already slipped away. So all of the girls that she was destined to go to USC with, and they ended up winning, you know, their college title championship together and everything. So that was kind of like the rat pack for them, right? So she kind of missed that opportunity. But that's what kind of propelled me to get into physical therapy initially. And so I did that for about 3.5 years out in Santa Margarita, out in Orange County. Awesome experience over at Pro Sport Physical Therapy. Worked with, you know, a lot of the athletes, but ended up finding out that my passion wasn't really geared towards physical therapy, but more or less the strength and conditioning side. So that's where I went ahead and kind of deviated just a little bit and kind of took that route and, you know, followed my passion. And that's where my heart is, and that's where it's taking me today.
That's incredible. Like, I don't even know where to start from there. That's like, good. That's like to, but it often takes a moment of pressure and a call to action where to produce something truly, truly great. And I think that's what you have on your hands here in Icon Fit. Like I said, you've worked with some of the most iconic athletes, to have rolled through that historic area, especially when it comes to motocross. KTM athletes, freestyle guys, you name it. And for those who, don't think that freestyle guys require, to be extremely explosive and flexible and all that, if you've ever seen a ruler or a dead body or any of those tricks, you know, you got to do a lot of cat cows to get the mobility to make that happen. So, and also with racing as well. So I guess the question on a lot of listeners' minds would be, is how does training for motocross and action sports in general, how does that differ from your everyday, like your Joe Blow going to the local gym and doing 3 sets of 10? Or how does it even differ from training for a different kind of sport?
Okay, so, well, let's start off with different sports, right? So sure. With my athletes, regardless, I want them being a well-rounded athlete. What does that entail? I want them to be able to run. I want them to be able to cycle. I want them to be able to box. I want them to be able to do jiu-jitsu. I want them to power lift. I want them to do calisthenics. I want them to do yoga. I want them well-rounded, all in all, right? Every single sport that any athlete competes in, there's certain elements that make that very special, right? And so to be a complete athlete is really what I'm trying to teach my athletes. And you'll see them in here. You'll see them boxing. You'll see them shooting hoops. And you're like, whoa, what kind of training is this, right? Outside of the traditional strength training side or cycling on the bike, because I want them to have fun. I want them to understand that it's part of a lifestyle, right? And I want them to be active. And the biggest side is the psychological aspect, is I never want them burnt out. You know, you hopping on the bike, going to the track, putting in motos, working with the riding coach, working with their teams, whatever they're doing, that takes a toll after that, right? So I never want the strength training aspect to be quote unquote work.
Right? Because to touch on that, I mean, I think, and from my experience, it's so easy to become one dimensional at times. Absolutely. And I found that with bicycles, like, cause I love riding bicycles, right? And then you look back and you're good and you go, damn, I am really doing anything. I need to get back to the gym. I've been to a few yoga sessions as we spoke about. And it's like, you're trying to branch out. But there's always that mindset, if I don't cycle, I'm going to fall backwards. But it's exactly what you said. You need to be well-rounded. And to have other outlets, which I guess leads to other conversation, other people, right? Because that's what it's really about, growing in all these other areas. Like if you said, hey, you got to go to a yoga class with all these people in a hot room, it's like, yeah, right. But that was one of the best things I ever did. We spoke about that the other day. So I think that's a great idea, because I think we all just end up being too one-dimensional at sometimes. So yeah. You're on the point.
And it goes back to, I think, my involvement in martial arts, right? So growing up, mm-hmm. being a martial artist, playing multiple sports growing up, you know, there's never one way to the top. Just like in business, there's no one single dimension, one single route to become successful. There's many different ways. And being fluid and being flexible, and being well-rounded is something that I picked up in martial arts and kind of took over and instilled as one of the main, pillars in my life. And so, you know, I think that's something that makes it unique here over at Icon is we still do some yoga. We do some martial arts and we're heavily involved with jiu-jitsu still. And it's just a great way of life, truth.
So you mentioned jiu-jitsu. And it's been mentioned on other podcasts, maybe a little too frequently at certain times, as some people say. But, hey, I haven't tried it myself, but actually you'll be happy to know that a friend of mine is training to become a jiu-jitsu instructor, and he's asked me to come out to some sessions in September. So I'm going to, like, it's completely foreign to me, but I'm going to start to roll starting September, so I'm looking forward to it. How do certain elements of that training modality lend themselves to motocross? And the first thing that sort of comes to mind, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is sort of the bend not break mentality of sort of creating that you're malleable, you're strong, so when you hit the ground, you bend, you don't break.
100%. And the great thing about martial arts, especially jiu-jitsu, is, you know, it's more or less thinking of yourself like a bamboo tree, right? Like, you want to be strong, you want to be limber, you want to be able to bend back and forth.
Right.
But the thing about jiu-jitsu, it's very, very, very cerebral, right? So it's not a game of checkers, it's a game of chess. And Right. Some of the black belts that you go up against, they look bored when they're going up against you. You're like, dude, I'm giving it everything I got, every ounce of energy.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to go through all the different moves in my head and trying to counter, so on and so forth. They're just like,
just dislocate both my shoulders and I'm like, sick.
It's like, so disheartening, you know what I mean? Like, talk about taking your man card away from you, you know? So it's great. But the thing in jiu-jitsu, it's ironically called the gentle art. Truly, there's nothing gentle about it.
Right.
They call him big guy tiny.
Yeah. So, Ricky Johnson, good friend of mine, did jiu-jitsu for a long time, but because of the injuries he sustained from riding dirt bikes, you know, his wrists, his knees, his ankles, all, he kind of got limited to what he could do on mats. But he'll be one of the first to tell you how great it was. Even
like two hit. Yeah. RJ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This surprises me. I need to see him in a gi.
Yeah. No, for sure. He'll tell you. Billy Leninovich, same thing.
Okay.
Used to roll back in the day.
I shared a not so quality inn with Billy Leninovich at Loretta's.
I think that, you know, when you, the question that Brad asked, you know, when you look at, my perception of it is like core strength, right? We're on a moto. That bike's basically a gyro. It's trying to bounce out of your hands. You're on one foot. You got that core is just tight the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at jiu-jitsu, it's kind of the same thing. You're off balance. You're off kilter. Someone's trying to knock you over. Essentially the same as a motorcycle, right? You're just trying to get – someone's just trying to always knock you
wrestling
down. You're in control.
Motocross is wrestling. You're wrestling with a dirt bike. It's 200 pounds.
Yep. That's a great analogy. That's precisely what it is. So the way jiu-jitsu translates over is a lot of times when you watch some rookie fighters or rookie riders – what do? The first thing is to grip and try and, you know, use their upper body strength, right. And they just get that death grip. Next thing you know, they're getting arm bump blown out. They're holding their breath and just, oh my God, they're.
You've seen me ride. Okay, cool.
So, and then you watch Jet Lawrence and you're, oh, how poised is this kid?
Yeah. And so how relaxed and how in tune he is with the body. Well, it's the same thing on the mats when you roll jiu-jitsu. A lot of it, large majority of it is in the legs and breathing. Relax the grip and only use it when you really need to. You know, a little bit of push, a little bit of pull. Everything is in the legs. Everything is in the core. Learning to breathe and relax and wait for the right moments to attack, right? So you're letting off, hitting the brakes, you know. And hitting the gas, hitting the brakes, just being very strategic. And I think it translates over really well.
Yeah, that is something that sort of gets understated is that the transition from brakes to gas, forward momentum, backward momentum, like when you can smooth out the those transition pieces, everything becomes a lot easier. When you're having to like not have to make drastic changes to the pitch and yaw of the bike, obviously some guys have a crazy riding style where they end up throwing the bike around a lot, But I would honestly, I would say that the majority of riders, when they get to their absolute peak, they become most quiet.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. Agreed. Absolutely. Yeah. So, and like you just said, you know, some of the top riders, they make it look almost effortless, right? So same thing on the mats when jujitsu, some of those black belts, they just like, they look bored. They can do this all day. When you're panting, you're exhausted, you're trying everything and just, you know, your body's just shutting down on you. And those guys are like, man, they can do it all day. So, that's one of many, different facets or modalities that we implement. Same thing with boxing, the eye hand coordination, being able to stay, work on your reaction time and use your legs and hips and relaxing the hands. Everybody thinks that when you're punching, it's with the hand. When in actuality, it starts with balance in the feet and turning in the hips. Power comes from the legs and the glutes. So, learning to breathe, all that good stuff that translates over onto the dirt bike.
You know, talking about that there, it just reminded me a couple of weeks ago, I listened to the audio book of A Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi. And he talks about that fluidness and just in tune and energy not used and energy used so effortlessly. And it just reminded me of that.
Was that inspired by the Olympics, the five rings or what?
I know this was, I think this guy was 2000 years ago, right?
Yeah. So Musashi Miyamoto was, it's funny because that's actually one of my heroes, right? So
right. I figured that there might've been a connection there.
Yeah. So he, back in the days, was a Ronin. He was a samurai.
Right.
And he has the most kills ever in history. I want to say like 60 duels. And this isn't like with wooden sticks. This isn't with BB guns. This isn't, you know, this is like fight to the death. I decapitate you. Take honor in that. And he is the renowned master of swordsmanship.
Yeah, he talks about swords and long swords and short swords and medium swords and... It was quite fascinating. Like I had to go back and listen to a few of it, but yeah.
Huh.
You know, and the thing with him, even though he was a fierce warrior, he was big in the community. He was big into gardening. He was big into calligraphy. He was big in his family. And so what he learned through swordsmanship, he took into everyday life and made that a philosophy, like, you know, a way of living. And so, yeah, the Book of Five Rings. If you haven't read it, it'll blow your mind.
Perfect. Well, we'll put the link to that in the description on the podcast. But that actually kind of reminds me of one of the sayings that I try to live my life by, or at least is very impactful for me, is that how you do anything is how you do everything. I find it very difficult for myself to sort of be like, give a D effort here and an A effort there. And you know what I mean? Like I need to almost have everything just so. And I don't think that's perfectionism. I think that's just having a standard and wanting to stick to it and taking pride in your work. Where does that hit home for you? And how does that relate to the way you train your athletes?
So I guess I'll start off with just my personal philosophy. So for my life, I have three main pillars. First one is discipline. Next one is grit. Last one is gratitude. So discipline for me is what I'm taking away from what you were just talking about. Discipline in all aspects of my life. From what I'm eating, from when I'm sleeping, who I'm hanging out with, what information I'm absorbing. Discipline in so many different small ways. Not just, oh, I'm going in here and working out every day. Well, that's grand and dandy. I'm not trying to be the best exerciser there is, right? I want to be the best version of myself in all aspects of my life, spiritually, mentally, financially. All those are super important to me. Well, I try and be well-rounded. And, you know, like you're saying, like, as far as being, you know, meticulous about every aspect of your life, I think is very critical. All the successful people that I know, not just athletes, doctors, business owners, entrepreneurs, they're very, very, fanatical, right? They're very meticulous, very anal retentive, very OCD.
Have to be.
Yeah. And that's what's allowed them to get to where they're at in life. So, it all starts with discipline in my personal opinion.
Absolutely. I'm harking back to a quote one time where it says, in order to achieve what you've never done, you must do what you've never done. You must go to a place that you've never been before in order to get to a place that you haven't been before in the past. And yeah, it speaks volumes. Like I just got back from Loretta Lynn's. That is in so many amateur racers' minds, the crescendo of the year. All of this periodization and programming builds up to be peaking right there. So whether you're an amateur athlete that was hoping to impress some sponsors at Loretta's, maybe you're a vet rider that was fast enough to make it into that as well, or you happen to be looking off into the not so distant future and see that World Vets is just 3 months away, almost to the day, actually. It always ends up happening on my birthday, the first weekend in November. How does periodization factor into training for motocross? Like you can't be wide open the entire time. There has to be some sort of, changing of sort of the intensity or what's focused on. Sometimes you're cutting, sometimes we're trying to put on a little bit more, muscle. If maybe we're moving up to the next size bike or it's between seasons and, like you worked with a guy like Marv. And Marv is a guy who always very sinewy, very, very, very light on the motorcycle, never really put on a lot of weight. But I assume that during the season, he actually probably like just his training and riding regimen was detrimental to just his, the mass that he was able to carry throughout the year.
Right. So for me, I guess it will start, easiest way for people to follow is let's start with preseason, right? So usually sure. Stop about three months. Ahead and ease our way in. And during that time, that's when we do all of our powerlifting, our heavy lifting, get some meat on those bones. Going out there on a 200-pound plus bike, going 80 miles an hour, 90 miles an hour, adjusting the different conditions, all the other people that are lined up on the gate with, you gotta be physically strong. And I don't care what anybody says. And it's always interesting to me where people are like, Charles, you train professional dirt bikers? They gotta train? They gotta work out? I'm like, I'm not even going to waste
like you wouldn't believe, brother.
and truthfully, it's one of the most difficult sports in the world, right? And one of the most dangerous. And you got to be so quick on your feet to make those instantaneous decisions. It's like, boom, just like that. And that could be the difference of being taken out, taking the wrong lines, losing position, you know, whatever the case may be. So, they have to be really sharp, even though, you know, in other sports, it may be physically demanding, whether it's MMA or football, but there's no teammates out there. You can't take it.
Right. No one's filling the A gap, but you,
there's no timeouts and you gotta be on it. So, whether it's supercross or outdoors or enduro, whatever it is they're racing, it requires a lot of physical and mental, strength. So,
When you take a guy like Marv, I mean, I've spoken to him a few times. I don't really know him that well. And, you know, seen him in the gym. He's a very light fellow, like you said, light on his feet. He was just a very poised rider, right? But then in a different comparison, you take someone like Weston Pike, right? And then, but you look at those two guys and you go, how do they get the same result? Like, you know, I'm just saying it's like they are two totally polar opposites, yet they both ride a motorcycle within seconds of each other on a lap time. I'm not comparing those. I'm just looking at their physical attributes. And like, I guess a question I could probably ask is like, not knowing Marv that well, but having followed him and a fan of his through his career, it's like, was there ever a point where he said, man, I got to put 10 pounds on? Like, I'm a small frame guy. Cause you look at all those guys, you know, look at Sexton or Lawrence or whoever you want in the top 10 or Kenny. And I mean, they are strong physical guys, right? Their body fat just oozes strength, right? And yet they are so, you know, I guess at what point do they say too much muscle slows me down? But then you have Weston that's just, you know, was a boxer. So I guess, I don't know.
In the case of Weston, I think he was thick like a Snicker because he wanted to be that way.
True, true.
I think that was by design.
But yeah, I mean, it was like, no one's going to screw with me. Look at me.
In every sport, there's a typical ideal body, ideal physique, right? You know, a basketball player that's almost 7 feet, probably not ideal for motocross. Although there are a couple guys, tall guys that are good, but that's not ideal is what I'm saying, right? You know, so guys that have the body type like Sexton, guys like Lawrence, you know, their bodies, it's the perfect fit for dirt biking, right? And they're not too big, not too small. Working with Weston in the past, that was one of the things we had to get the weight off of. So we upped more cardio. We were be a lot more mindful of tracking his calories, but it's a very difficult task to do as far as marketing calories, just because they're burning constantly going. I mean, when they're doing when you guys are out there doing motos, you can't get enough calories, right? Yeah.
So we keeping Weston out of Chipotle would have been difficult.
For sure. So now it was a lot more endurance. You know, the guys could lift through the roof back in the days, right? So we kind of got away from some of the heavier lifting and did more of the muscular endurance, a lot more cardio, a lot more sprints and stuff like that to really open up his lung capacity, as well as his overall endurance. And you can see it helped him tremendously. And one of the things that we implemented back in the days with Weston was we did a lot of boxing. He loved the box, and he learned how quickly you'd be out of gas by holding your breath and trying to punch with your hands. So you have to be quick, nimble, relax in the hands, not until you make contact, you know, with your target. And it's kind of funny story is till this day, I still train Vince Freese, and I trained both those guys. Man, you guys remember back?
Hopefully not at the same time.
Oh, at the same time.
Oh, goodness.
Funny story, right? I'm like, oh man, I'm sitting there standing. I'm like, holy shit, this really just happened.
Yeah.
That's a nice little,
I love that.
Yeah. It's a nice little cherry on top. But, nevertheless, so somebody with his body type, I'd have to train differently. Somebody that was smaller, let's say like one of the guys at Loretta's, Jeremy Fapani, you know, he's one of my guys as well. He's, upcoming, you know, rising, rider. Lot of talent, got a lot of years ahead of him, bright future, but he's genetically a lot thinner, you know, so that was one of the things is we're trying to put some more mass on him, but now that Loretta's over, we're going to start trying to add a little bit more weight, a little bit more meat to his bones, just that way he can be that much more in control of his bike, you know, so especially riding like, you know, he'll be going in racing the 250s and whatnot in a couple of years and pro, and he can't be too light and dainty. And that was the same situation with Marv. You know, he's incredibly talented rider. Technique, which is false. But as you saw, career longevity, these guys are lifting. Their training programs have to evolve as well. So it's been really cool to see how strength conditioning programs have impacted riders and allowed the riders to get on a new level, you know, over the years. So I've been working with guys for almost 20 years, and now everybody's into fitness. Everyone's now it's a part of everyday regimen, right? So it's awesome. I love seeing it.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, when you touch on some of that stuff there, if you want to go down this road, it's like, you know, I've seen Tyler Berriman there, Austin Faulkner, and you talk about Faulkner, that's, you know, the adversity that he has overcome, the injuries, the recoveries. And I mean, I seen him there one day with just a pair of shorts on. And I mean, I don't think I've seen a solid guy. I mean, we talked about Pike, but his legs were just like tree trunks. And, you know, I guess kind of what I'm getting is let's kind of touch on the rehab side of things, because you seem to be the guy that is the rehab guy to an extent, right? I mean, Berriman's there, he's working on shoulders, you got the gun out, you know, you're working on all these guys. So, you know, I guess the injuries are so common. Do you just kind of ease them back in, or how do you take all those guys? I mean, especially Faulkner, I guess I think the guy's amazing to come back each time from all those crashes and still want to do it. It must be an amazing mindset.
Yeah. You know what? Austin is a different breed. You know, he is. He's built different. And when you talk to him, he's very intelligent, you know, and very cerebral. He's very well-rounded. But that guy, regardless of what, if he played another sport, he'd probably be top of that sport because he wants it that bad. He's really that stubborn, really that invested and passionate and obsessed with being the best, right? And so he's very relentless. And his mindset is what's going to eventually, hopefully, be the reason why we hold up a championship one season. So, poor guy's just been riddled.
I mean, I ran into the same sort of thing with Jeremy Martin. You know, I was at Geico when he was there, and it was just like, man, the guy just had a heart of gold, heart of steel, but just could never just find that next step. And it's quite sad in ways to see that they never reached their full potential, because I think we'd have some different stories.
Yeah, no, I agreed. I mean, I think we can talk about a lot of top riders. Cinciarulo, another one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to talk about missing championships, like, heck, even a guy like Kevin Windham is on that list. Ezra Lusk, although they kept running into this red-haired kid from Florida that was pretty damn fast. So it might not have come down to fitness at that point. But look, in regards to, like, it's one thing to come back from an injury to sort of return to sport and get that particular, save at the body, but say if it's a shoulder or a knee back to where it needs to be to compete. But there's also a rebuilding of the cardiovascular endurance that needs to happen. Like, I'm sure there's times when a guy like Austin, if he spends 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks off the bike, he doesn't just show up and immediately can do 30s. How do you get him back there?
So everything that I do, I mean, going back to a couple questions ago, as far as periodization, right?
Sure.
So as far as that goes, I usually work in 4 week blocks, right?
Okay.
And is a foundation. And then you build strength and go, you know, we'll every 4 weeks you kind of retest and kind of transition over the next building blocks, start adding a little bit more cardio, a little bit more intensity, some more sprints, so on and so forth. But when we first start off, it's just heavy lifting and then base cardio. And then we kind of change it up every 4 weeks from there accordingly. As far as on the bike, Forkner, some Black Forkner works with my good buddy Rhino. And then so he and I communicate and work together tandemly to make sure that we're on the same page, that our program in the gym as well as at the track are, you know, working together and is, you know, the best plan for Austin at that point. So having open communication with his riding coach, Rhino. It's a big piece, you know, so. And I think that's important for a lot of trainers to understand that. Me, I'll never tell you how to set up your bike. I'll never tell you what corners to hit. I stay in my lane. I'm your strength and conditioning coach. That's what I focus on. I'll work with you mentally. But then when you can find somebody like Rhino, that is kind of transitions over and we blend together so well, have such great chemistry. You know, we're having such good success with Forkner last year until he got injured. But, you know, it's building blocks, right? So
right.
Taking time and communicating, making sure that, one, he's getting proper recovery. That is one of the biggest things. I think a lot of these guys get burnt out because they overtrain. It's a long season. You know, for you and I, when we're not racing, we don't really always see the having to go to sleep at night. Maybe let's say you get an argument with your wife or whatever, but then, you know, or you have a newborn and you don't sleep well, or your dog's freaking sick or whatever. Human beings outside of being pro athletes, right? And so you wake up the next morning, got to get ready, got to fuel, got to get on the track, put in the motos, come back. And then on the weekends, they got to fly out. They got to do press day. It's, and then after they're done racing, it's a long day. They hop back on a plane, come back home, and then it's right back to it, right back to work. And it's a long season, going from supercross right to outdoors, and you have a little break. That's why, you know, injuries happen. It's a lot of demand on the body, not just on the body, psychologically as well, right? So for me, recovery and being able to rest is critical.
You touched on something that I don't think is talked about nearly enough, is that the fact that motocross athletes, unless your name is Ricky Carmichael in 1990 or 2006, you're flying commercial all the time. You're on a flight almost certain parts of the year, not so much, but like essentially every 5 days, you're on a flight of some sort, whether it's flying to go test, flying to the race, flying home from the race, you name it. That's taxing, and never even mind trying to find something decent to eat in an airport. Don't even start with me there. Like one of the things that I wanted to talk about with you is, like Talon Hawkins. He's a young athlete. He's on the tail end of his first full season as a pro. How do you approach his training differently than you'd say a guy like Austin, who essentially he's coming up almost on 10 years as a pro?
So each of them, they got different goals, right? So, you know, for Austin, one of our goals is to get back and just be healthy, get his legs back underneath him, and eventually get ready for the 2025 season. And he'll be a contender, right? Someone like T-Hawk, I'm not trying to add that additional pressure, be like, hey, you got to be on the podium every weekend, you know, or, you know, our goal for him is more realistic. Hey, we're going to shoot top 10 and we want to be consistent. We don't want 1 week in the top five and then one next week in 15. Mm-hmm. Right? So the name of the game is going to be consistency. And that's one of the things that, you know, some of the top riders, Dungy, you know, I was talking with Dungy. That's one of the biggest things about him, right? It's never like he won every single weekend, was on top of the podium, ended
there.
Up taking, you know, but he was always in the mix of things and he was always consistent weekend in, weekend out. And that's one of the things that, I try and teach all my guys. We want to be consistent. And as long as we're making some forward progress, then we're moving in the right direction. I don't like the up and down of, you know, looking like a damn earthquake, right? But somebody like T-Hawk, you know what? For him, he's still young. He's still developing. I'm not going to add the same goals or pressure that I would for someone like Forbes. I have high expectations before, right? And right now, I one of the things I don't want to see happen with somebody like T-Hawk is him burn out. That kid is incredibly talented, has so much skill on the bike, but he needs to have a lot of fun. He loves to surf. He loves the dog, you know? And I have to make sure I got to be delicate with it, right? And in the sense where he's still developing, still maturing, and over since he just transitioned over from amateurs to pros, he's learning so much on the bike, about the bike, teams, the politics, all that stuff, like signing deals and making sponsors happy, doing social media, this, da, 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 da. Whereas that kid, man, he'd rather just either go surf or go ride in the hills. You know, that would make it.
Yeah.
You know, but right now that's not paying the bills. So he's still got a very bright future ahead of him, and we're trying to piece everything together. So his riding coach, Jay Whipple, he and I talk a lot and make sure that we're kind of pinballing him as well. And, you know, I'm hoping that we get a strike of good luck with him here pretty soon. Things will start falling.
Also too, Charles, I mean, we've had some conversations in the past. I mean, you're also a bit of an endurance runner as well, right? You've done some 100-mile races.
Yeah, well, not 100 miles, not 100 miles.
Not 100 miles.
My furthest one is 50 miles. So
okay. 50 miles
up in Big Bear. And so
that's so crazy.
That started off, I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there. Just I hate running. Good at running. I didn't.
That's gonna make the clips on the podcast.
I hate running, but it was one of those things in my head. Is in life, I feel like I've always got to do things that are outside of my comfort zone to break through and get that next level of confidence. Right. I love being in the pain cave. I love doing things that are unconventional that I'm not naturally good at, and running was exactly that. I'm like, man, these dudes are animals. And I want to be a well-rounded athlete. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, and I'm going to go ahead and throw on some shoes.
Unfortunately, I think in society this day, that's kind of frowned upon, right? But we thrive on that. Like, yeah. I hear it's like, you're going to do 100 miles on a bicycle? It's like, yeah, why not? Like,
yeah.
That's where I find myself. That's where I find out
I start living like everybody else. Just tell me so I can change things up, guys.
Yeah. But you also did, you've done some like Spartan type things as well, right? You put some teams That's together cool. and made it fun. And again, not one dimensional, like you're spreading it out.
I try and do a little bit of everything, you know. I think being, like you were saying, multidimensional is very important.
Diverse.
Where I started off with trail running is one of my buddies ended up saying, he's like, hey, you know what? I want his 2-year-old son was diagnosed with leukemia and I want to do a fundraiser. I'm like, I'm in. Let's do it. Little did I know what I got myself into.
Yeah, you didn't ask enough questions, but I appreciate your enthusiasm.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, yeah, it's going to be a trail run up in Big Bear. I'm like, all right, well, I like Big Bear. I've camped there a couple of times, had a good, you know, couple of good memories and so on and so forth. I'm like, all right, I think I'm physically, you know, in shape and mentally tough. I can do this, no problem. Sure. And keep in mind, this was a 50-mile race. In preparation for it, I took it way too lax. And I went in, most I ever ran leading up to that was 12 miles. I'm like, you know, oh yeah, yeah. So
half marathon.
Yeah, half marathon, right? So I was like, all right, I'll tough out the rest. Little did I know the elevation, kicks
terrain.
Around, the terrain, the hiking aspect. You know, I was always a sprinter. I was never an endurance guy, you know, so. I got my ass served to me, saw Jesus a couple times.
What's he like in person?
Oh, yeah.
You haven't been there, Brad? You haven't been there?
Oh, well, come no. On, I'm, hottest day of the year here, I decided to run a 10K for the very first time ever in my life. And it was like 90 degrees outside with no water with me. So, yeah, him and I had a chat. Right around the 9-kilometer mark when the sun was beating down on me like God's flashlight being like, was this a good idea? Yeah, so I've had the conversation as well.
Yeah. It was so funny because there was a guy that came up and was looking for me. And so they were like, hey, you know, apparently my wife got really concerned. They're like, hey, have you seen a tattooed guy with like Asian doctor? He's all like, yeah, but he's looking kind of white right now, like more translucent. Like he can kind of. I'm like, yep, that was me. So my first attempt at doing the 50 miler, I only made it 30 miles, and then they came off and basically cut me off, and basically, you know, they at the tail end, they're just like, they come out and be like, hey, look, dude, now you're in danger. The sun's coming down. You're gonna get lost. Like we got to go ahead and clip you right now. So tag me out. Cool. Took that ass beaten, and after that, I was pretty fired up. I'm like, you know, I'm going to train my ass off and get ready for this one next year. So I kind of had a chip on my shoulder, learned more about the sport, started picking it up, and really started to enjoy, like, getting my ass kicked. And the funny thing
is, some people get into golf, Charles.
Yeah.
Not ultras.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably also how they get into ultras, but either way. I got to respect that. Like, that kicked my ass. I'd like some more, please.
Yeah. So, in one year, I did my first half marathon. Then I did a full marathon. Then I jumped in and did the ultra and did finish that 50 miler. The following year, I did a 50K. So I've got about 4 of them under my belt. And even though I've, you know, dabbled in it, every time it's still very difficult, you know. So, It's a big challenge.
Man. I don't think the pain never goes away, right? You just get better.
Yeah,
and that's all it is.
You become more tolerant to it.
Right.
You build a you know, calluses for lack of better words, and you become conditioned for it. So and you're
calloused the mind.
Yeah, yeah, and then that's exactly it. I mean, that's one of the things about, like, you know, guys like David Goggins that I respect so much is doing hard things all the time, so that way you build these mental calluses. And Hoppo, what you were saying earlier, I think a lot of people are too soft this day and age, you know, like going out and doing, I think they lower their standards to where people have, this generation has gotten really soft, and I'm not an advocate of that. So
no, I mean, I just try and live. I mean,
your T-shirt, for those who are listening to the audio version of this, Charles' T-shirt says "Comfort breeds weakness." So you're literally wearing that statement on you right now. So
a couple of years ago, I did Goggins's 4x4x48. Right, I ran it. I'm going to do it. So I trained and I ran, and I'm not that good of a runner, but I'm going to do it. And I screwed the math up and I did 54 miles instead of the 48 because he didn't want it public on Instagram or social media at the time. For some reason, he was raising a charity thing, but he put the start time down as 5, right? Or 8. I can't remember what it was, but anyway, it was East Coast time, but it didn't say that. So I ran an extra 4 miles and was like, I had the math screwed up, but I was all, should I just quit at this time? Well, no, you got to go to the end. But the biggest mistake I learned from that was I did not do anything for a week after. I should have just took the next day off and started training again. I took a week off and that was the worst thing.
Oh, an object in motion stays in motion, baby.
Yes.
Like it's always harder to start again.
Yeah. That's one of the things truthfully about this you know, running ultras is after I'm done running ultras, I'm done for several months of running. I'm over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Leading up to it, I am burnt the fuck out. I'm done. I'm over it. And but then those couple months go by, I'm like, damn it, why didn't I keep going? You know, why didn't I can taper off, take some downtime, but still keep running and kind of rebuild the base again. So yeah.
So, I mean, we've touched on a wide variety of subjects here today and we could go for hours, but when you look over what you've built, I mean, you're an entrepreneur, you're a businessman, you're a fitness, you've done an awesome job in building all this up. When you look back, it's like, who are some of the people that have helped you or you've looked up to or mentors that have like, you know, either guided Charles to, you should maybe look at this or maybe look at it this way. And like, you know, who's some of the people that have really helped you out and guided you a little bit, because we all can't do it ourselves. We all need help.
Yeah, no, 100%. And he probably the first person that comes to mind would be, he's like a father figure to me. His name's Michael Gibbons. Out in Yorba Linda, when I used to teach tennis, I taught his kids, gave him lessons, the whole nine. And then he was like, hey, you know what? I got a tennis court at my house. Why don't you come on over and start teaching lessons here instead? We'll do a little trade out, so on and so forth. So I was like, really, you want me to go over there and start teaching your kids? And so that was my first taste of entrepreneurship, right? Start my own business.
Right.
Working for somebody. Years go by, end up training a lot of top tennis players that, you know, including my sister, and that kind of, you know, kind of took over that realm for quite some time. And little did I know what he did for a living at the time, right? And he ended up being later found out I went to college and graduated, and he's like, hey, why don't you open up your own gym? I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that. He's all like, well, let me go ahead and teach you. I'll give you the foundations. I need you to do the research, put together a business model, research how to put a business plan together. I'll help guide you. I want you to put the systems together, so on and so forth, all this stuff, all the marketing then. And he kind of, I'd meet with him every couple months, and he'd be like, no, change this. This is what I would do, da-da-da-da. And to find out, he was a venture capitalist. And he's...
Nice.
Oh, yeah. So back in the day, there was a furniture store called Krause's Furniture. And when he graduated, he took over that. He started as a salesman, ended up becoming a manager, ended up blowing it up. And from one location, blew it up nationally. Now, then he went ahead and took that same system and implemented it into Soup Plantation.
So, okay. Soup Plantation, yep.
Yeah. So, obviously, he knows what he's talking about, right? So, very, very successful, but one of the most humble people I've ever met in my life. Also, one of the most grittiest people I've met in my life, meaning he was a mountaineer. So, his passion was he wanted to go and summit all 7 summits of the world, and including Everest.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you ever watch any of those mountaineering documentaries, it's bananas. It's just a different world. And for him to go ahead and accomplish that, everything that he's done, raise his family to be just outstanding citizens, in the community. That's really where I kind of lucked out and had his guidance, and I would attribute a lot of where I, you know, the foundation where I've gone is because of him. So, yeah, lucky, man.
I love it. Honestly, we like Hoppo said, we could go 1,000 different directions. We could talk about adrenal fatigue. We could talk about different exercises to go to when returning to sport. We could talk about the fact that most people would be curious to find out whether or not a professional motocross athlete even taped their ankles before racing, because that's something that like a lot of like you've seen it in football, you see it in hockey. You don't see that a lot, especially on like the athletic therapy side when it comes to motocross. But maybe we save that conversation for another day. For those who are in the Temecula, Murrieta area who might want to roll into the gym and see if they want to roll with you, whether it's jiu-jitsu, boxing, or some bicep curls, how do they find out more information? And I know you're sort of starting to roll out some things in the future that they might not have to be super close to you in order to benefit from your knowledge.
Yeah, so you can come check us out. We're in Murrieta, Icon Fitness Studio, right next to Carlson Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. It's our headquarters, our West Coast headquarters here, and very close to the KTM headquarters as well for North America. And you can check us out on Instagram, Icon Fit Studio, or you can follow me personally and hit me up, you know, on IG at Yellow Neck Ninja. And, you know, we will be coming out at the end of this year with the training app to help anybody from, you know, out of state, out of country, whatever we can do. And it'll be more athletic based. That includes professional athletes, amateur athletes, weekend warriors. But it's not going to be geared towards, hey, I want to have a bigger chest. Hey, I want to get ready for a physique contest. It's not that. It's going to be more athletic performance based. So really excited for that.
That's perfect. Awesome.
They want to boost up the bench press. They can do it on their own time. Charles Dow here on the Big MX Radio podcast. This has been another episode of Racer's Mindset. Thank you so much for joining us. This is so much fun.
Hey, thank you, fellas. I appreciate the opportunity again, and definitely looking forward to doing it again soon.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times. This 1 week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans. Play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time to get it.
Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wheel spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the field. If you can put it all together three times, this 1 week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows.